Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist podcast. We're glad you're here. This will be a fun episode.
Oh, of course. It's always good.
What's really cool is we can also, we're going to phone a friend. So we're going to phone a friend here real quick.
Oh, boy. The suspense is killing me.
How's what up?
Easy.
Hey, T-Bone. Welcome to the Little List Podcast.
This is the second time in a row you invited me on the podcast well into my bedtime.
Look.
No, now this is much, much less well into your bedtime, though.
Yeah.
This is earlier than the last time, but still into my bedtime.
That's true.
I mean, both of the hours start with a one.
one o'clock.
Steven, how was your day?
How was my day?
Yeah.
Oh, it was a good day, you know. It's let's see. it's a good day. I started the day by doing a bridge prep where I did the extractions and did a temporary bridge and decided that I didn't actually need to prep it and that my temporary fit great and I could have just gone straight to final. But, you know, basically it was a waste of an hour.
It's so, all right.
Nonetheless, that's perfect. It's a great way to start the day. Then I had a surgical case where socket preservation was done by not me in the practice, but there was no bone there.
Uh-oh.
And it was told that we could place the implant diagnosed by not me without a cone beam.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy. This is good.
So, for those of you listening, rule number one, first off, don't diagnose whether you can place the implant without the cone beam. And two, if you didn't do it, even definitely set yourself up for the potential that you can't maybe place the implant the day of, regardless of uncovery. Right.
Yeah. So anyway, I ended up doing a very large graft, a lateral graft on it to do a buccal graft to get it ready for the implant.
Here's the deal. I think that transition is really well, because what I would like to talk about while I have both of you on the phone, T-Bone, as long as I have you before you fall asleep, and JP, I figure you're with me to the long haul, is...
Or JP gets kicked off by his significant other.
Yeah. He's outside, though. He's already got
basement. No.
He's already got kicked outside.
I've already been kicked outside.
I'm
going to sleep out here.
What is the key to a successful associate relationship? I mean, obviously, I'm hiring an associate. She's starting August 3rd. Y'all have both had associates.
I can't wait for this because you gave me so much grief about how I was the problem.
Yes.
I still
to be clear, I still think you're the problem.
Well, I know I'm the problem because I have standards.
Maybe that's what it is. We'll find out or we won't.
I have standards and this other E word called expectation.
Maybe there's a UE word though, right? Unrealistic expectations. Like I think that's what's going to be interesting. You know, so Timo, you gave me some advice earlier this week. Kind of recap some of the things that you feel like when you look back over your failures as an employer to associates. What would be your thing you're telling people that you should be looking to not do or be or to do?
Well, I think the first thing is and again, I think you're against me on this part is I think there's a clear line in the sand of procedures an associate can do versus an owner can do, certainly for a time frame. And that time frame could be 6 months, 12 months, whatever it is. But I think there has to be a clear line in the sand of that. And I think you have to earn the right. I think there has to be some level of expectations or a success path drawn out where we do a baseline evaluation. For, you know, I'll use TEREC as an example, that maybe in the beginning it's a 3-hour procedure, but we have a end goal of 1.5 hours for a single unit crown start to finish. And then we have the stepping stones with timelines. So maybe month one or month two, it's 3 hours is acceptable, then we've got to be at 2 hours by the end of that time. And then by month 4 or 5, we've got to be at 1.5 hours. So I think having a line in the sand of what procedures somebody can do, and then a success path of the most critical things there. And then the other thing I think is important is to have a clear defined, I call it your business model. For example, in our practice, our business model is posterior restorations get done same day. So you can't do a crown until you learn how to do it the same day or single visit.
That's fair, JP. How did you, because one of the things I loved, I mean, obviously, I don't really disagree with you much, T-Bone, on the majority of that. I really like the idea of a success path. JP, how has that looked for you in drawing that out as with your associates of like, this is the path to success that we want you to take? Have you kind of had those lines drawn in the sand? Because like, I guess my mentality is I don't expect me to have such like stark lines, I guess. I probably tend to be a little more fluid in that, but how have you done that?
So I've done it every way that you've just talked about. I've done it with the clear cut line in the sand. I've done it where it's been really, really almost freewheeling, like just go do whatever you have to do. And here's the ultimate issue. No matter what you set up, you are going to be the one responsible to hold that person accountable. And I love having the line in the sand, and I love having the success plan. And in fact, I've got an example, and I'll share it with you if you want it, of how we set this up.
Yeah, like, we want the example.
We like wrote it out and
so he's gonna copy and make his own.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, if you could send that to me and I could post it on the podcast, that'd be great.
Please do. But here's the problem. Here's the big problem. And it's not a problem, it's the challenge. The big challenge is actually making the time to one, follow through with what you've set up, but two, holding them accountable in the moment. Because we all know what it's like in the moment.
It's like raising a child.
That patient's in the chair right now and they want to get that crown done. What are you going to do? Are you going to stick to your guns and stick to the plan, or are you going to let them go and maybe go a little further than they think? And it's easy to say we're going to stick to the guns, but in the moment, dude, it's hard, really hard.
So here's where I'm excited about what we're doing, and T-Bone and I have talked about this a little bit, so I got to give him a little credit for part of this. And I've heard this is an old Linda Miles thing too. She kind of advocated this, was that we're going to be moving towards and logistically we have constraints with our chairs, right? Because we only have 4 doctor chairs and we're hiring 3 doctors. Is that we're going to go towards a on one day. 2 dentists practice dentistry and the other doctor does clinic exams, et cetera. So I think that what's going to be nice there is that on any given day that our associate is doing dentistry, there is another primary doctor there who's not doing dentistry that's doing other things like exams and checks and whatnot, but it can also be a resource to lean on while the other dentist is doing dentistry too. I think that sets us up for some success. What do y'all think about that?
Totally. But again, you're going to have to be the one to make it a priority to sit there. And for example, Sarek is a fundamental in the practice. You're going to have to make it a priority to sit there with that doctor and let them struggle, but then also help them, right? You're going to have to do that real training role.
So is that just the time? You're saying being willing to sit there and let them fail and do that? Is that what you're kind of getting at?
Basically, yeah. Like you're gonna have to watch them struggle to draw a margin, struggle to design a crown, and then hop in and show them how to do it. And it's gonna take multiple attempts before they get it.
Have y'all set do y'all set goals for them, like production wise?
Yeah, I mean the goal is 3x or 3.5x their base pay.
3.5x their base pay. Okay, so. Yeah, so like so essentially $2,000 a day in production is kind of what you're looking at for most people.
Mm-hmm. And
I try to, you know, and again, look, I'm not running a dental factory here. I'll almost say that my goal for the first few months is for them to not do much more than that.
Sure. No, I don't disagree with you. Yeah.
Because just to focus on getting, you know, I try to tell people, my goal for people is to become a good clinician. And I think, you know, I think part of the reason I failed the early side of things is one, I didn't have experience with associates. And two, I don't think people understood what I meant by being a good clinician. They felt that being a good clinician meant you produce a lot, or, you know, you did XYZ a lot. And for me, being a good clinician is your ability to command trust from your patients, trust from your team members, your ability to move on the fly and change from a filling to a crown, or to pull something from hygiene, your ability to know when to say no, you're not comfortable doing something. You know, to me, those are some of the tenets of being a good clinician. You know, it's not just how beautiful your margins are, or how productive you are. It's kind of like a combination of all those things, plus the humanity and the empathy of being a person. And I think, to me, the first 6 months is really all about becoming a good clinician.
So is that
Sully, that's where you and Rick are going to have such a big leg up, is that you both have that skill set innately inside of you.
Sure.
Right. And the associate should be able to model that behavior. And my biggest failures early on were that my first associate in the flagship office, her first day, I was gone.
Yeah.
Her very first day, I was gone, right? And she had like 4 Cerec crowns on the schedule. And like, I'm remoting into the computer.
You weren't setting
them
up for success.
Like, that's not setting up for success, right?
No.
And that was really foolish. And because you two have an understanding that there will be a set schedule where you're both going to be there, or somebody's always going to be there to support this doctor, I think that's a huge leg up.
I think one of the things I think that we're going to do well too is like we had a team meeting today, right? And so we sat down with our whole team. We kind of mapped out what the plan was and how it's going to go. And ultimately, I think where we are on the same page is that we both get, and I think our team gets, that the future success of the practice is dependent on the associate's success. Like, that's our, that's where I've always given you a hard time, T, is that, like, on some level, the next layer of moving forward has to be the success of that person, right? I mean, it's that total concept of replace yourself.
On some level, on the absolute level.
Right.
I can't achieve my goals without that.
And ultimately, I think one of the biggest concepts you've instilled in me over the past couple of years is that concept of replace yourself, of how do you set somebody up behind you for success, and you basically pour in everything you have to them for them to succeed, because at the end of the day, you know you can succeed around that, and that gives you the opportunity to do that. So I think that's where I was really excited about our team today, was our team kind of bought into that of we're shifting schedule. They're willing to take different roles. They understand, like, hey, our long-term success is solely built off her success, right?
I do, but I think we're missing a key point here, and we keep internally looking at what we can do and how we can pour into. But there has to be somebody with a poor ability. I mean, they have to be willing to accept. They have to have the mindset to accept. They have to, you know, they have to be wanting it. And that's, I think, where some of the areas where I've personally failed is I've been around people that didn't want it as badly as I wanted it for them. And it just probably wasn't the right time at the right office at the right time for them.
Steven, what would be the characteristics you would look for? Like, what are you looking for in your new associates? Like, what would you say is, like, these are the things, my non-negotiables of what I need to have? I mean, here's where I have the problem with this. There are a ton of young dentists who are excited, that are listening to this podcast, that want jobs. And then there's a ton of dentists like us who are trying to find jobs or find people to do that. Like, but there's this disconnect. And what is the message to the people trying to find odd jobs of like, how do you make yourself the candidate that all of us can't live without?
Well, I don't know if there's a right answer. And look, I'm on a different spectrum than most people. And that doesn't mean like I'm above people. It just means I look at things from a different angle. You know, the first question I ask anybody that I've interviewed so far is, how much money do you need to live?
And the problem with that is, T-Bone, is most people don't know, right? I wouldn't know what that answer was.
Well, that's okay. I mean, then I would give you some homework and just let me know. Because the reason I ask that is because we will never be the practice where, as an associate, you can make the most money. We just won't be that because we're not a business that's set up that way. But we will be a practice where you can become a phenomenal clinician and stay and be happy or move on to bigger and better things.
That's fair.
And that's okay. So I need to know, do you need 200 grand to live? Right? Do you need 250 to live? And I've heard numbers like that before from people. And I tell them, listen, you know, I don't think this is a good fit, you know, just off the bat, because I don't want to take that on myself. I don't want I as the owner don't want the pressure.
That's fair.
That I need to get you to that point, you know, pretty quickly. Okay. And then it also questions in our business model, you know, we work in a model of one assistant, one operatory per dentist. And in our business model, you know, for somebody with a limited skill set to do $800,000 in dentistry is going to be a little bit more difficult for them. Certainly, I do more than that myself, but I don't have a limited skill set in dentistry.
Right.
You know, and then, so that's kind of the first question I ask people, because I need to know, I don't want to hire people that look at dentistry as a medium for money. Certainly not if they're within the first 5 years of their career. That's not a good mental fit for me. So that's one of the first things I look at. The next thing I look at is, let me see some of your work. And there's no excuse in today's world to not be able to show some of your work, whether that's x-rays, whether that's photographs, whether that's iPhone pictures. There's no way for me to be able to see that. And then for me, the third thing I talk to is, what are your expectations in terms of procedures you'd like to do? And
I think that's a good question.
And so, you know, but people straight out of school give you the standard answers. I'd love to place implants. I'd love to do it. And for me, that's the opening for the conversation, that you won't place one implant here your first 6 months. Just won't. Even if you sell it, I won't let you do it. And you know, and I know it's a harsh perspective, but it also tells me about the person's ability, willingness to stand the test of time and so to speak, earn the right. And I know for many of your listeners, Sully, that's not something they like to hear or want to hear. But it is also why DSOs do so well, because they give people, to a certain degree, a level of carte blanche to come in and do, you know, a lot of them go into offices and they're the only dentist in there. So they can do pretty much what they want. And well, competing against that is difficult.
Well, and my problem with it is, yeah, it's like, because like, look, I preach on some level this idea of, let's shorten the gap. If I want it now, why do I have to wait? Let's do it then. Let's do it now. But part of that is, I guess, is like, what I don't like about blanket statements of I'm not going to allow someone to do something X period of time is, if someone's gone through the effort to earn or learn or do something, I'm okay with it. Now, am I okay with someone coming in and like never having any implant education and wanting to just throw in an implant in my patient? Of course not. But like, if someone's gone to the effort and done the training and they're capable of doing it and getting someone to accept the treatment, I'm not going to stand in their way of doing that, I guess.
So somebody's gone to the education, never placed an implant. Is that okay?
I guess on some level, we have to define what's an acceptable layer of education. Sure. I think most programs have placed in it. Most implant education programs that I see at this point in the game, there are live patient surgeries. So if they've done something that doesn't have that, then yeah, I'm going to have probably some questions of, okay, you know, do we really feel confident in doing this based off not having that now, Sully, experience.
How, Sully and T, how about if your associate were to go through some incredible implant education? Like, where they're placing implants with cone beam and guided surgery.
Like the dental implant continuum with 3D dentists?
How would you feel about that?
I would say let them rock and roll.
as long as they were in JP's room. Let them place some implants, baby.
No, but
yeah.
I still take a different approach.
And the reason is, and again, it is.
Look, I have to practice what I preach, T-Bone. That's where I disagree with you. I'm too close to that position, right? I'm too close to being that person to where that if I was that person, I would be like, screw that. Like, get out of here.
I know. And that's why you would never work with me.
Exactly.
but it's okay because all it takes is getting burned a few times to have the perspective that I do. And the part of it is, again, until you're there to see some of your basic work done through recall, I have a hard time with it. And again, to me, step number one, if we back up for a second, is what does the practice need? So number one, I'm totally agreeing with that. What I've always said is I'm not a fan of the associate being the specialist in the practice, unless they're a true specialist.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I'm a big fan of the whole point of building a business and bringing an associate in so that you can do the more quote-unquote fun procedures. So I'm not a big fan of people that come in and say, I'm going to hire an associate and let them do implants, because I'm like, dude, when they leave, you're not going to be able to, you know, clean up or fix anything, whether it needs fixing or not. You're not going to be able to fix any of it.
Well, and I agree with that. If there's something I think we have done well with this process is we've been very clear about what the practice needs and what the practice doesn't need. Right. I mean, like the last thing.
So again, part of that success path is, look, you can place implants week one. Okay, if you can show me that A, you've done it and you can have documented cases of your work, B, you can show me that you can do a quadrant of restorations in an hour, that you can do indirect restorations with Ferric in an hour and a half, if you can do molar endo and the crown in 2 hours, if you can do all of these things, then great, you're advanced and you're ready to go to that step. But step one is in our practice, we need a general dentist associate first, more so than we need somebody else doing implants right away.
Yeah, you're not looking for the super GP in your practice. That's not going to bring you
not at this time
bring you a lot of value right this moment.
JP, how has it worked? What do you find worked best for you?
Well,
Botox.
We've got
Botox
one.
Works well. Yeah,
Botox. Botox works, baby. you know what? It happened without meaning it to happen, but lining up that exact type of associate where he is the true general dentist in the practice. He is the guy that is very capable of doing direct restorations and single unit crowns. That's the best fit. And that's the guy that likes to work with me the most.
And to be clear, you can make a daggum good living doing that, right?
Absolutely.
Like, I think that's part of the problem we do sometimes as we, and we're part of the problem in that regard, is we preach this whole like super GP specialist mentality so much to the point of like,
as an owner.
Yeah, as an owner. And like, we also forget to like I've had a couple cases the past couple weeks where it's like, I've read and ready to shit my pants. Like, it also carries a lot of risk. Like, you start messing around with stuff and doing big cases and doing stuff like that. Like, that also comes with a weight that's a lot different than general dentistry. And so my point is in saying that is like, look, it shouldn't be a negative. It's not a negative to be a good, solid general dentist. Like, we need that, and that's a good thing, and you can make a daggum good living doing it.
Yeah. T, I want to back up to what you said a minute ago, though, about your interview process and the questions that you ask. I think that's really good advice for anyone that's going through this process is to ask those questions, because I didn't realize this at the time when I brought my first associate on, brand new out of school. She had a really, really specific style of living that you know, we that her and her soon to be husband wanted to attain. And if I had realized that early on, I don't know that I would have necessarily thought it was a good fit, because we were talking numbers like 250, 300,000 a year. And looking back on it, that was never going to be possible. Yeah, exactly. Never going to be possible. And unfortunately,
not without the skill set to go with it.
Exactly. Fresh out of a residency program, that wasn't going to be possible. And that set us up for a lot of conflict. And there was conflict then about who was going to take on certain cases. And then we did get to the point where implants started happening in the practice and the associates started doing implants, but, you know, not necessarily the way that I was doing implants and not treatment planning in the same way. And so now it was a conflict about who was going to do it. And I think if we had just had that conversation right up front, we could have avoided those things.
You know, and this is, so I would encourage you to, for you this on this, Sully, is, so you guys are Sullivan Dental Partners, correct? Right. So we're Raleigh Dental Arts. So we call it, we don't have the T-bone way of doing things. We have the RDA way of doing things. And what that means is that for us, whether it's me and my partner or me, partner and associate, whatever it is we're going to agree to use the same materials, same burrs, same instruments, and we're going to have a RDA way of doing things. And that oftentimes meant that I adapted to certain ways. And most of the time it meant that the person coming in adapted to our practice ways of doing things. And so for me, that was important, to find somebody that was adaptable and moldable. Like, for example, today, beautiful young lady. And she's like, so you guys don't use glass ionomer? And I'm like, no, we don't, because, you know, what is the main use for glass ionomers? And they're like, well, deep root decay. I'm like, well, we don't encourage people to do that type of dentistry. And so
we don't do a lot of class fives on deep root decay of teeth.
Right. So, but these are the kind of the conversations. And that's the other thing is, you know, just simple things that maybe I've taken for granted and maybe you haven't, Sully, and certainly JP, I know because of your experience, you haven't, is asking them, walk me through your class two procedure. And it's amazing how many people do things so differently. Like we just had somebody, not super recently, but they didn't use any flowable in their class two. And I mean, I didn't even bother to ask that until they went and did something. And my sister was like, you know, is the new way of doing things not using flowable? And I'm like, no, I don't think so. I think they're putting bigger, more flowable now.
It is challenging because we don't know. Like on some level, we assume like, oh, they graduate from dental school, so they know, you know, how to do something. But like in our instance, what'll be interesting is like, so she didn't go to the same dental school that we did. So like, obviously she's going to learn probably complete different ways of doing things. Not to mention it's 5 years later than when I was there. So it will be interesting to see kind of those nuances of things.
You know, look, and then you came back to the question earlier, Sully. You said, how does somebody make themselves indispensable? And I'll always go back to you never stop becoming a better version of yourself clinically. And that means like, you know, look, 20 years in, I do unbelievably well. And I'm still going to take IV sedation class with JP in September, you know, because we need to add that service to our practice. And I'm going to, you know, I'm trying to sign up for a soft tissue grafting course because those are services I need to add. Because, you know, for me as the owner, and I think, you know, I put a lot of blame to myself and to other owner dentists because they put themselves in a position where they're not really ready for an associate mentally because they're competing with their associate because their skill sets haven't advanced.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You know, whereas I'm just literally trying to give away all my dentistry. I'm literally trying to give away all my dentistry except two procedures. And you know, I was having a conversation with Fiza tonight about my plans moving forward. And he said, so you know, because he's getting ready to buy in and he's talking about, you know, slow down. And I said, listen, I'm not interested in slowing down. I'm interested in getting more focused on what I do in the practice.
Yeah, to the point that what I do in the practice, you can't compete with because you don't have the skill set to do it. So it doesn't even affect the way you practice.
Right, and it shouldn't, right? And so my next phase for me, my hope for, summer 2021, is that I literally only do sleep and implants, and I literally don't even do hygiene checks anymore. That truly the general practice is run by a partner and an associate. And they're running the hygiene and they're running the GP part of the practice. And I'm literally feeding myself, maybe say 30, 40% of that comes from stuff I pluck out of hygiene that they refer me. And then the other half of it comes from direct consumer marketing that we're bringing into our practice for me to see.
So, go ahead, finish.
So I was going to say, so part of it is, again, for the owner dentist to know, to be clear, where do I want to be a year from now? Or where do I want to be 5 years from now? And to share that with the person that they're intending to hire, because it tells them a lot about what their role is going to be in the practice. And, they may not think 5 years out, but at least they think 1 year out. Nobody goes into a job saying, I'm not going to be there a year from now. I hope they don't, at least.
All right, let's talk about, kind of as we wrap up things here, obviously the three of us are unbelievably believe in CE. How do you feel like this is the best way to structure CE with an associate? Should the doctor pay something? Should the associate pay something? What have y'all done that's worked? What do you feel like the best way is to encourage CE and do CE is?
I think it's tricky because we want to encourage it, but they also need to see the value of it. Like, if you're just getting a stipend to do some CE course, like you're going to sign up for the easiest CE in the best location at the best time of year when it's probably not conducive to the practice to be there. And you're going to, then again, it sets up conflict.
Right? Botox Imagine in the Bahamas.
Right. Botox course in the Bahamas at fall break sounds really good, Dr. Sully. Right. Come on. So, but at the same time, I feel like as the employer, we should be there to support our employee.
So what have you done, JP, that's worked in your practice specifically? Give me specific examples. Are you paying part of it, percentage of it? What's it look like?
So moving forward, what I'm going to be comfortable doing is paying a percentage of a CE course, right? So I don't know what that percentage is. Maybe it's 25, 30%, but I will be comfortable paying some percentage of the education that the doctor chooses to take on. But we're also going to have a really good discussion about it first with this idea of a growth path. So what procedures are you trying to add or what procedures are you trying to get better at? And let's pick CE together that's going to make sense for you, right? Like, if this is going to be a general dentist, it might make sense to find some sort of restorative prep design course. And, if that's going to help them prep faster and better and give better clinical outcomes, is that worth you paying $1,500 for them to go to? Probably.
No, definitely. Tebow, right? What about you?
Well, I have a unique scenario. As do you guys, you have access to unique scenario. So let me deal with my unique scenario, and then I'll go with what I recommend. And again, I'm old fashioned in a sense. So my unique scenario is we provide CE in the office, 36 times a year. So there is no shortage of CE opportunity in our practice.
But most of that isn't basic CE though. I mean, that's definitely more advanced CE.
It's going to be competing with the things that you're doing.
Yes and no. So my argument against it is everybody in my practice needs to understand sleep, correct? Because you got to talk to them about it in hygiene and encourage it. So you got to have some understanding of it. Same with implant dentists. You got to have some basic cone beam and planning knowledge to be able to even understand to diagnose it. Because diagnosis is still a key even if you don't execute it. You got to know when to refer, not to refer. So to a certain degree, from a CE credit perspective, to fulfill their requirement, that's a non-issue to a certain degree in our practice. because of 3D dentists, so which is housed inside upstairs in the office. So that's a different perspective. But you're absolutely right. The majority of what we teach is designed for owners or soon to be owners, in that sense. Now, what I recommend doing is I recommend treating CE like an insurance. So in other words, we'll provide you on a one-to-one match basis up to X dollars per year for approved classes and with a promissory note that if you leave my office 6 months after you take the CE class, that I will withhold that from your last paycheck. So that way I have skin in the game, they have skin in the game, and there's a level of recourse for it. So that's my recommendation. And if the person's not comfortable with that, the other answer is pretty easy. You have an obligation to maintain your license, and so you can create your own CE.
Nice. So ultimately, both of you kind of sound like you both want skin in the game, but you're also willing to help, you know, put forth something to.
But I want the right to choose what's acceptable CE, because to me, it's not about what you want; it's about what the practice needs,
or even probably what they need. You know, what can help benefit them the most as they kind of grow.
Well, very selfishly, what can help them benefit them in my practice.
Yeah, I think often those go one in hand. I just think it's the way we phrase that's differently. No, you know, Botox doesn't, but I would argue Botox really, they may think that's helping them with the practice, but it's really not. Like, right? Like,
no,
that's where we have the opportunity to like to hopefully speak into people and say like, yeah, well, here's my experience with X, Y, and Z course. Like, yeah, that could do something, but well, this goes a long way in doing that.
There's a lot we can learn from the DSOs. You know, a lot of the DSOs don't have this conversation anymore because I'm talking about the larger ones.
They have a pathway of doing it.
Right. And so to me, the same thing, right? Like, so for example.
So maybe that's what we should be doing more of.
I would tell you that there's a pathway. You know, the pathway to me would be Paul Homily, first and foremost.
Yep.
Okay. A direct resin course, anterior posterior direct resin course. You know, those nowadays you can do through manufacturers. And then an endo course, okay, then a basic surgery course, okay, and then, you know, to me, those are the first four CEs that you take out of dental school.
That's fair.
And then, so I will support you on that model on a one-to-one match basis with a six-month, you know, guarantee of employment.
Yeah.
But if you want to take education beyond that, you're welcome to go pay for that on your own.
I think that's fair.
So really, you need to have an approved list of CEs, and I would even go as far as saying you can go take it anywhere you want, because then they come back to me with, well, I watched a YouTube video on how to do that, and so I would have a list of approved CEs that are acceptable to me. And the other thing I would add to that list, you know, down the road, you know, after the surgery or whatever, is some type of sedation program, probably oral sedation, to start into sedation.
Yeah, we're lucky now on that one because she just finished her GPR, so she already has her IV sedation. So
yeah,
we're very fortunate in that regard because that's a big one. Because I agree with you.
But sedation is a great general dentist service.
Oh, an unbelievable general.
Not just a surgical dentist service.
So speaking of CE, I do want to take a moment to say, hey, you know, obviously the three of us are unbelievably excited about a program. Obviously, we're doing. And integrating and really getting people off the ground and implants. So, JP, talk a little bit about what we're doing at 3D Dentist as far as that goes.
So, at 3D Dentist, the digital implant continuum is a comprehensive implant education that's going to take somebody from having never surgically placed an implant, touched a patient, all the way through the pathway of number one, good surgical principles, identifying case selection. How to plan the case out digitally using cone beam, using some sort of intraoral scanning capability to know what our options are for fabricating a guide and sending it to a lab, and then also going through the process of placing the implant in the patient. Now, the cool thing that I'm really, really loving about this, and we're one group through and we're getting ready to start our second group, is the amount of hands-on that we're doing. And hands-on more than just with patients, because patients are a big part of it. It's the big part. But also hands-on with drilling in models, drilling osteotomies on models, placing implants, dummy implants on models.
Or even taking out teeth and bone grafting. I mean, that's a huge one.
Taking out teeth with a, you know, with the surgical setup, but also with something like a piezo on pig jaws. These kind of things that are basic core surgical principles. It's really, really exciting for me to watch the docs come through that have never done this before. And when they go back to their practice, getting the feedback from them and seeing the cases they're doing, it's just incredible. So we're really excited about this. We've got what, 10 people signed up for the next go around.
Yeah, 10 out of 12 spots.
10 out of 12.
So, yeah.
So yeah. As of now, July, whatever this is, 15th, we've got two spots open.
T-Bone, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think the only one thing I would, not one thing, multiple things, but the main thing I would add that JP missed on that is we're invested in people's success. And for me, it doesn't end with the lecture and the hands-on on the models and the live patient. It's our Facebook group and our texting and the ability to send cases and, you know, the real, you know, it's not a 100% clinical CE. It's also a practical business CE and an implementation CE. And, you know, one of the reasons that I love it is we hold people accountable. You have to come to the third session, which is the second live weekend. You have to come with 5 of your own patients that you have scheduled for the following week. And you leave that weekend with those 5 guides printed, planned and printed, so that you can go back and do them on your patient. Because what we learn, what I know is the longer it takes for you to do something afterwards, the less likely it is for you to do it. So, you know, we want you to come to the live weekend, spend 2 days doing implants on patients, and then have 5 implants planned in your office the following week so that you really solidify that level of education. And so I think that's really, you know, a few things that separate us is, one, we're personable and fun, but there's a few people out there that are like that. 2 is with live patients, which is phenomenal to be able to do that here in the U.S. on real patients, you know. Actually, real patients.
patients that will be followed up with.
Yeah, well, patients real, that come from my practice. People. So I'll be following up with that.
Somebody will follow up with them.
And then I think the digital workflow is very unique because I don't believe there's any other program that is focused solely on a digital workflow in the sense that
totally
start
immersed,
to finish,
yeah,
you know, totally immersed in it. And then I think that hand holding and that real care for success, you know, from hey, have you bought your kit? Have you got this done? I don't care what brand it is at the end of the day. You know, we'd love for you to support BioHorizons or whatever, but you know, let's get it done. What's holdback? You know, what can I help you with to really help people be successful?
No, I completely agree with all that. And ultimately, at the end of the day, what I'm going to add is I'm going to say, look, you know, I am unbelievably blessed to be a part of that group. And JP and both T-Bone have been incredible mentors to me. And so if you're someone who's listening to these podcast episodes, you're like, you know what? Gosh, I love what these people talk about. I really get into this. I think that they can continue to help me. Check us out. I mean, go to 3Dentists.com. We have a ton of courses that we offer, all sorts of different stuff. And ultimately, we really do want to continue to invest and give back to dentists who are looking for that. And I think that is a really unique thing about our group is we really treat everybody like family. And so, yeah, check us out. Come sign up for a course and have a good time.
Sign up for the dick. Now, most importantly, what we did not mention about the digital implant continuum is for anyone that's interested in signing up with the last 2 spots, for a low, low price, I don't know what the price is, low, low price, you can get the VIP experience.
VIP.
The 3D retreat.
That is
the
true.
The 3D retreat.
We have co-ed dorms now.
No. We can't say they're co-ed at this point, okay? I have to get approved by my wife.
I thank you so much for listening to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. We will see you next time. We love you all. Tune in and come join us as 3D Dentists. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.